Welcome to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve is about helping kids get good grades in school and succeeding in life. The basic premise, the premise we operate on, is the fact that all kids have a natural ability to learn. As a matter of fact, all of us have a natural ability to learn. This is for all parents, teachers, and students who truly want to succeed. To get more information on the material we will cover in this segment, you can go to www.howtolearneasily.com. That's www.howtolearneasily.com. Or if you have any questions or stories you'd like to share with us, you can email us at questions@howtolearneasily.com.
Okay, thanks, Virginia. The guest for this show is a really accomplished man, an important fellow by the name of Dr. Roger McIntyre. You don't mind if I call you Roger, do you, Roger?
No, not at all. That's very nice.
Yeah, because I like that name.
I bet you do.
And I notice in our email traffic you abbreviate your name the same as I do, as Rog.
I know, I saw that too. I thought, when did I write this? And then I realized it wasn't
you. No, you wrote it to me in the email exchange. Anyway, Dr. Roger McIntyre, PhD, is a child psychologist and has been a consultant and teacher of teachers in preschool, grade schools, high schools, and colleges since 1960. He is actually currently the Professor Emeritus of Psychology at the University of Maryland, where he taught for 32 years, and is an award-winning columnist with the Martinsburg, West Virginia Journal and other publications. He's published over 100 learned articles or scientific articles on everything from infant vocalizations, eating problems, the strategies for teachers to high school, and motivation and college retention. But more important for listeners on this show, he is the author of really two important books. The one that he may well be chatting to in preference today, that's his call, is Raising Your Teenager, Five Crucial Skills for Mums and Dads. He's the author of an earlier book, which I think is hugely topical, Raising Good Kids in Tough Times. Now, if you folks who want to get in touch with him directly and read his wisdom, you can go to his Roger McIntyre WordPress, or rogermcintyre.wordpress.com. That's his blog, and that's spelled RogerMcIntyre. So, Roger, what's your choice? Raising Your Teenager is what you want to reveal to the folks today?
Well, I think we could start with them, and we probably will include some of the preteens, because I think most people think of the teenage years as being those that start with 13, but
yeah.
The parents out there probably would agree with me right away that the teenager years for their kids started way before that.
So
we'll include a lot of them.
So your five crucial skills for moms and dads.
Yeah.
They've probably got their attention on that already. You might as well give them what they want.
Okay. Well, the first skill there is just learning how to talk with a teenager. You know, I think a lot of us think that when we bring up a topic with a teenager, that it's the topic that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that probably the most important question on their mind is, what does this conversation say about me?
Yeah.
And often we kind of miss that, and when we do, often the message goes through that something is very wrong. And so that you learn to have a reputation with your teenager, because you sometimes, or maybe quite often, bring up topics that are a problem with your teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't bring up your problems, you don't bring up the sister or brother's problems, you probably bring up their problems. And if that comes to be the habit, then you can see that they might not want to always do this, and they want to find a way to get out of it. So parents usually come to me and say the first thing that's the matter is that I have a really tough time getting this kid cornered where I can talk to him.
Yeah.
And I usually start by saying, well, I think one of the first things you ought to do is try to talk with him and kind of means not just a play on words, but also it's a caution that the conversation has to remain kind of neutral at first, and you have to look forward to many other talks to get to very, very serious topics. Mm-hmm. So often I start with saying, well, let's look first at all the things that are in a conversation that are not what is said and what is heard, but are what is going on. So, you know, if you have your arms crossed, or if you have your TV remote in your hand and you have your finger poised over the mute button, waiting for the commercial to be over, and you're glancing over the TV all the time to make sure you know when the commercial is over, it looks to me from that you are not paying too much attention. And,
right.
So I'm sure the teenager picks that up right away.
Yep.
And we're off to kind of a bad start.
Yeah.
So
it's very invalidating
to this thing as being partly physical. It's not just what you say; it's what you're doing while you're saying it.
Yeah.
And all of us could learn a little about that. And then we need to go on to looking at how much you talk about the teenager. If it's always going to be, you shouldn't be so much like this, you should be like that, and you should try this, and you should... We got a lot of comments in there with that Y-O-U in there.
Yeah.
And so the child is learning to duck and dodge, and so they're getting somewhat defensive. In fact, I've had many parents say to me, you know, I don't know why every time I start to have a conversation with this kid, he makes it into an argument and thinks it's something about him. I would end up saying, in some of my counseling way, I would end up saying, you know, well...
you have to be gentle on this one.
It's about him. And if it's always going to be about him. I mean, how often do you go talk to your neighbor and talk about their problems?
Yeah, or what's wrong with them?
And, you know, we have another way of talking when we talk to adults than when we talk to our own children.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of problems with that kind of thing in attitude. And we could go on about this for a while, but I think the main thing to understand is when you first hear... Can we talk, or I have something to say, or it's at the dinner table. The first thing to do is don't jump in there too fast. Leave a lot of time, a lot of pausing. Pauses only mean that somebody is actually thinking, so that's good. And just keep it very slow, because a teenager doesn't have the way with words that you have. It may seem like they do, because and they may even brag that they do, but actually... They're pretty short on vocabulary, and they're pretty short on putting into words the feelings that are coming up. And so they need a little extra time to be processing and to have it go kind of slowly so that they can get, you know, their words in when they want to. You can see that demonstration. Just to keep some pauses in there so that they have time to break in on the conversation, and so it doesn't become too much of a competition of who's got the airwaves.
Right.
And we can have a nice conversation. So that's pretty much the first one, except to say that a lot of the time when I start a PTA group, I'll say, well, let me ask this question right off the bat of you folks that are here. How many of you love your children? Of course, they all look around like I'm kind of nuts.
That's expected,
and you get a few hands, and then eventually, of course, you get all the hands. And I said, well, here's a very similar question. Let me ask you this one. How many of you like them? And there's a long pause of silence, and then somebody tentatively raises their hand and says, well, you know, I like him sometimes. I said, you know, this is a very important point. Loving and liking are kind of a different thing. Loving is an emotional thing. It's a commitment. It's a long-term commitment. Liking is about what they are doing and what they are at this moment. And you need to like your children. And I often get parents to say, well, there's not much to like. And I said, you know, you're a parent. That's your job is to find what there is to like.
Right. And get along with the kids. And have the kids get along with the kids and have the kids getting along with you.
That's right.
The
and,
trouble
and
is
admiring something about each other that you can actually comment.
The trouble is the rot really sets in way early.
Yes.
That's the tragedy. And then they try and have a relationship over the top of these very early errors.
Right, and expect very quick return.
And, I mean, they talk about the terrible twos. Well, let's be honest. If you're exploring the world as a toddler at two, and everybody is running around stopping you, and interrupting you and saying, don't, you'd get a little bit ticked off and, you know, ill-tempered as well.
And you stay away from them. If, to whatever extent you have the right to do it and the opportunity to do it, you probably stay away from them.
Well, if you're wise, you can redirect the child and make it fun to take them out of danger, but,
sure.
You know, you don't crush their reach. And kids are easily invalidated and made feel invalid, and that's a big problem that we observe. So what you're saying there is really good, Roger. I like it, and I'm sure our listeners will get a lot out of this. Next point?
Well, I think the second skill is looking at the family games. I think a lot of the time us parents don't recognize this at all occasions, but I'll just run off the two of them. I bet you can't make me happy. There's a lot of parents out there that are probably nodding now, saying, well, I've heard that one before, and you know, the kid comes home and sits around the house and says, I'm bored. And you say, well, why don't you do your homework? He says, I don't have to have it done right now. He says, well, why don't you go outside? It's a nice day. Go out and take a look around. I don't want to do that. It's too cold. I don't want to do that. I have to get my jacket. I don't want to get my jacket. Say, well, and you might as well get in there and maybe you could work on your puzzle or something. Well, it's only the sky part left, and that's too hard. I don't want to do it. And after a while, you get the impression that as long as you make suggestions that they can turn down, the conversation will continue. If actually they accept anything that you say as a possibility, the conversation ends. And you begin to realize that a lot of these kinds of vignettes that go on are really situations in which the whole idea is to just to have them have a little entertainment. And the entertainment may not be the kind where they're having a big belly laugh, a joke or something, but it may be something to go along as the day goes by and gives them something to fill in with. And so it is true, I think, also some other things. For example, one that any parent out there that has more than one child will find out and will nod with me is referees are fun. You know, as long as I got a referee there, that's mommy or daddy.
Yeah.
And I can say, you know, hey, wait a minute, you know, you can't hit your brother like that. Quit pulling his hair, you know. You can't do that. And I know that the referee will interrupt the game, keep it from being too serious, and I know that the referee is always there, and I can bring them into the argument and say, well, he hit me first, or I can find something else to do. And again, you get the impression that what's going on is they're wading into this situation merely for the somewhat negative but still usable camaraderie of it all. We can always have this little argument and go around among us, and it's not just quiet and boring. Some of the others that have a little more point to them are things like the hurry-up strategy, which means, you know, if the child can get you hurried, maybe you'll make a mistake and approve something that you otherwise would not approve. You know, I've got John on the phone. He says he'll drive me over.
Virginia's laughing on that. Have you tried that on your parents when you were younger, Virginia?
Of course not. Not me.
She's such a saint.
Right.
I grew up in Australia, 100 yards from the Pacific Ocean. So my parents didn't have this problem. I just wanted to go down there and play rugby with my mates or go surfing.
Yes.
Life was simple out there.
Right.
But anyway,
as you were saying.
I think so. Some of the rest of us have had times when we just weren't in normal lifespans, I guess, and got better results than that. But often with the hurry-up strategy, the kid will say, you know, Mom, I got Johnny on the phone. He can give me a ride to the basketball game. Can I go? And you say, well, but I don't know. How old is Johnny? Does he have a car? Is he, you know, licensed? Does he drive safely? I don't know, Mom, but he's on the phone. He needs an answer right now. Can I go or not?
Yeah.
And you say, okay, go on. And they're doing that for a purpose, of course, because they realize that you're on the fence about this and that you're not sure you want to approve of this activity, at least of them driving with some other mate down there. But since you haven't got a lot of time, you nod your head and they sort of win on that one. So sometimes it's not a game that needs to be prolonged, but actually does have a certain point to it.
Right.
As you go along. One I think that the teenagers especially use a lot is testing, are you my friend? And then here's one where the know, I said, you know what they've done? They've got it now to we only have 3 minutes between classes. I get out of one class at 11:15, and I have to be down to my English class at 11:18. Isn't that terrible? I mean, that's too quick to be able to get my... I can't even go to the bathroom in that length of time. What they want to know is, does that put you on my side, or are you going to be against me? And I think a lot of parents will bias towards the school. You say, well, they probably know what they're doing. It probably really is enough time. This is probably the time when you could pass up that temptation and say, you know what, that's not very much time. You know this isn't going to change. You're not going to be able to go down to the school and tell them that it can't be 3 minutes, it has to be 6 minutes. So it's not something where you really have vested interest, because this is the way the school's decided to do it, and whether you and your son or daughter think it's right or wrong is probably not going to make any difference. So why not side with the friend that you have in front of you?
Yeah.
And so a lot of the time when you meet that test, it's probably good to go ahead and meet that test and come out on the right side of it. So there's a lot of games where those things go on. It usually ends up with something about, you're responsible for my bad behavior, you know. I'm your son, therefore you're wrong.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of the time I think it's a good thing where you just say, well, look, we're here now.
Yeah.
You're who you are and I'm who I am. And let's try and work out this problem instead of trying to just find out who's responsible for it and leaving it at that.
Yeah. You know, I was taught a little strategy a long time ago by a very wise person, and it was to look at the truth of something rather than having an opinion about it, and then look at, okay, so how might we more optimally handle this? Or,
right.
You know, what's a more optimum answer? And looking for what's right about a situation and how it can be worked, rather than doing a complaint and grizzle about it, which doesn't get anybody anywhere.
Exactly correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So a lot of the time, it's with these games, it's a matter of being able to, in your own mind, somewhat sit back and say, you know, what do we want to get done with this conversation, or what do I want to get done with this conversation? And if it's just a matter of being tested to be a friend, you know, instead of just arguing the point about whether they should have a 3 minute time between classes, maybe this is a point where you could go to the bigger result that you want, which is stand up on their side.
Yeah.
Well, moving right along, I would say what I'm doing is just going through the skills that are alluded to in my latest book, Raising Your Teenager, which says 5 crucial skills for moms and dads.
Right.
And the third skill in that group is the one about bad habits. We all worry about the fact that they might get on drugs or they might get into alcohol.
Yeah.
A lot of other habits, and to some extent that might go back to this attention getting business and just testing their new found freedoms
they
grew up from the age of 10 to 20.
Your chapter title is actually very insightful, I feel. It's titled Steer Through the Minefield of Bad Habits.
Yes.
It's a good one. So what's the score on that, Rog?
Well, I think probably the one that the parents worry about the most is some kind of drug problem or alcohol problem.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the time the parents feel, and I've had clients that do this, that they feel like they just can't tell when it's just something else. And, of course, their kids keep saying, you know, Mom, I don't do things like that. You know better than that. I just need some money.
Yeah.
And so I have listed in Raising Your Teenager some things to look for. And I think when I read these off, that the parents out there are going to say, well, you know, I've seen all of those things and didn't really indicate anything about drugs. But this is a situation in which if some of these things occur together, you know, all of a sudden one summer he does about, you know, 4 or 5 of these things.
Yeah.
Then it's time to look into it. Now, let me just quickly write them off. You know, unusual and unexplained need for money or money missing.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you look, you thought you had a $20 bill in your pocketbook, and it's not there. And you ask your son about it, he doesn't know anything about it, he says.
Right.
Everybody's had that problem. Sometimes you find the $20 somewhere else, and you have to go back and tell him that you did. or you don't. And it may have nothing to do with money he's spending on drugs. But people who are starting out on drugs have a real money problem because it's costing them $75 or $100 a day to get those drugs. Now, where are they going to get that money? And I think they're looking to you. Anyway, number two is changes in friends and eating habits and sleeping that don't make sense. I had one client that came to me with this kind of problem. He said, you know, he's been a great kid. He's so good. He's 14. And all of a sudden this summer, he starts dressing sloppy. He gets up later. He doesn't like anything to eat. I can't get him any breakfast. I think breakfast is an important meal. He won't do anything about it. We have big arguments. I caught him on a situation where I think he was stealing some money from me. And he's agitated, and he has these cold symptoms. You know, he's always sniffing and snorting around, and his eyes are red, and he's getting the infections that seems to me more than he used to get them. He has cravings, but then again, he doesn't have any appetite. And he's got a lot of fatigue, and he's kind of clumsy. He seems to be short of breath sometimes, starts coughing when that's kind of irritating.
Right.
And he has a peculiar odor to him, you know. When all of that came on that summer, and I advised her, I said, you know, I think you should go take a look in his room and see if there's anything there that would tell you something about this. The first time she walked in there, she found three or four things that were related to taking drugs.
Yeah.
So there were some needles there, and there was some makeshift sort of hypodermic things. And she was right in the beginning.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure, again, that the parents out there say, well, you know, my kids have those kinds of things all the time. That's right. That's all the time. Mm. But if it suddenly happens, and all of these things are starting to change. You know, he doesn't even like soccer anymore. He was loving soccer, and all of a sudden he won't even join the team. He won't even go down to practices, you know. He's got these new friends in the mall, and they're always hanging out. And I don't know what's going on. I think it's time to look more carefully.
A big behavior change, that one.
Big behavior change.
Yeah.
And then the one that we thought we were going to spend some time on in this show was to look at some of the things about getting along in school.
School strategies, yeah.
That's kind of because, you know, if things are not going well in school, then the whole happiness of childhood is kind of clouded by that. If you're not doing well, or at least average, or staying in there without too much trouble in school, that hangs over everything else. You know, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and the teacher doesn't like me, or whatever it is, and the grades are not good. And so if you can help with your teenager, or even before teenager, in the grade school, you can really do a lot of good. It's not just a matter of being able to help them learn about arithmetic. It's a matter of making them learn that school is okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for that, Roger. That was really interesting to me as an old-timer, and I'm sure all of our listeners got a lot out of it, so thank you. We're going to now take a little break for this week's show and continue on with this interview next week, because Roger has got a lot more to pass on to you good folk out there. And next week we really get into how he handles college students and also helping parents help their kids at school. So you'll all want to hear that. And that'll be for next week on The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. If you have any questions that you'd like to ask us based on this program, or ask of Dr. Roger McIntyre, you can email us at questions@howtolearneasily.com. So that's it for today's programs, folks, and we'll see you next week again with Dr. Roger McIntyre.